It's half past eight. Half past eight.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike throws a quiz party with four experts as the floor show. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of duplication, Information Please uses the question that was received first, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Information Please is perfectly off the cuff. Everything said on this program is completely unrehearsed and spontaneous. Tonight, our tested trio is on hand. Oscar Levant, author, pianist, composer, and movie star. John Kieran, sports expert. That was Mr. Levant sniffling. John Kieran, sports expert, whose recent book of nature notes has been doing very well indeed. And Franklin P. Adams, light verse writer and conductor of the Conning Tower in
New
York.
None of those books do anything at all.
We feel it a special privilege this evening to introduce our guest of honor, the Secretary of Agriculture, Mr. Claude Wickard. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. I'm going to start this evening with a question that's off the record. We're not going to win or lose any money on it. I wonder whether the Secretary can help us out. Can you give any reason why Cuba would be an ideal place for starting a silk-growing industry? Now, this question came in from the assistant to the vice president, Mr. Harold Young, right from Washington. Why Cuba would be an ideal place for starting a silk-growing industry? Any ideas? Mr. Wickard.
It'd be an ideal because we might be able to exchange some of our agricultural products for the silk that we could get from Cuba.
But why could we get a lot from Cuba, though? I mean, would it be... I imagine that this is a question that has something to do with the... with why Cuba would be a good place in which to grow silk. Well, any particular reason why it should be?
I don't know, but I suspect its climate
might be
the same as that we have in the Orient where the silkworm...
Oh, apparently even better. That's the point. Mr. Kieran.
Well, is it because the, some form of mulberry tree grows there?
Well, now, that's too specific for me. The answer that I have is that the soil and climate of Cuba, as Mr. Wickard says, permit five crops of silk cocoons a year, whereas Japan is limited to three crops. And as a matter of fact, I understand we have thousands of mulberry trees down there already planted, and the industry is growing rapidly, which is a good thing for Mr. Wicker to know. And now we'll start in with the official part of the program with a question coming from Charlotte Woods of Arlington, Massachusetts. Get three out of four, if you can. Identify the song and give the entire line in which each of these phrases occurs. Remember, gentlemen, no singing, no hummy. Here's a phrase, faded and gone. What song does that occur in? Mr. Adams.
'Tis the last rose of summer.
That's exactly right. And do you know how it goes on? Give the entire line which faded and gone.
The last rose of summer left blooming alone.
Yes.
All her something companions are withered and gone.
Faded and gone.
Very good.
Lovely companions. Couldn't he have sung
that if he wanted to?
I don't think so.
No?
He could if he wanted to. Well, what would I do with him if he did?
Well, like... All right.
Lost and gone forever, gentlemen. Where does that occur? Mr. Adams again.
Oh, my darling Clementine.
Very good. Thou art lost and gone forever. Dreadful sorry, Clementine. How about gone and married? Gone and married. Where does that occur? In what song? And give the line, if you can.
Is it an old song?
Not terribly old. I think it began with Adams. About, I don't know, half century ago?
All right.
How about it, Mr. Adams? For he's gone and married, yum, 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 yum. Do you remember that, Mr. Adams? From the Mikado?
Yes, but I'm not sure that that's the way it goes.
Well, that's the way it goes on my card. One wrong. Gone to a better land. Where does that come from? We have several hands. Mr. Kieran.
To a better land I know, Old Black Joe.
From Old Black Joe. That gives us three out of four. Now, how about this one? It comes from Henry Kamin of Brooklyn, New York. Get three out of four. Gentlemen, this is about cabbage. I believe this is the first time we've ever had a question about cabbages on our program.
We had kings.
We have had kings, but no cabbages. In what variety of cabbage do we eat First, the bud of the cabbage. By the time I get through, I'm going to strip this cabbage bare. Mr. Kieran.
A Brussels sprout.
Brussels sprout. What were you going to say, Mr. Levant?
Borscht.
You eat more than the bud in borscht. How about the stem? In what variety of cabbage do we eat the stem? See, you just don't know. Mr. Wickard, any idea?
I have not.
What do you grow on your farm, Mr. Wickard?
Hogs.
What am I going to do? I don't think I have a single question about hogs this evening.
Make up one.
Stem, gentlemen?
You got to, can we guess?
Sure, you can.
Artichoke.
Artichoke. Is artichoke a cabbage?
I don't know. I don't like them anyway.
Kohlrabi, gentlemen. Kohlrabi. Probably edible. Who knows? In what variety of cabbage do we eat the leaf? The leaf. Mr. Levant.
Coleslaw.
No,
it's true.
Coleslaw is just cabbage that's been sort of put through a mincer.
I mean, don't be snobbish about coleslaw.
I never cared for the thing. Mr. Adams.
I would think regular cabbage that you have with corned beef.
No, there. In that case, we eat the bud. The bud. In the case of, what were you going to say, Mr. Kieran?
I was going to say the common cabbage.
No, kale or collard cabbage. What is collard cabbage, Mr. Wickard? Any idea?
But if you don't know, and you don't know about coleslaw.
Well, if you don't think those are the leaves of the common cabbage you eat, what are they?
Bud.
What a bud.
Let me know buds, Mr. Kieran. It says here, bud, common cabbage. Two wrong there. How about the flower? In what cabbage do we eat the flower, Mr. Kieran?
Choufleur. Cauliflower.
Cauliflower, yes. Very good. Or another kind of cabbage in which the flower is eaten.
Well, I don't...
Broccoli?
I was just going to say, does that belong to the cabbage family?
On my card, it belongs to the cabbage family, yes. That gives us only 2 out of 4 and sends a set of the Britannica and $25, courtesy of Lucky Strike, to Mr. Kemet. Not so good on your cabbages, boys. How about this one from Miss Cecilia C. Kays of Laguna Beach, California? Get 2 out of 3. I'm going to read you several quotations. Each of them omits a phrase which has become the title of a well-known book. Fill in the missing words, you see, by naming the book. Is that clear? Here's the first. Quote, I have seen the wicked in great power and spreading himself like... And how does that go on? The conclusion of that sentence, Mr. Adams?
Would that be a book by Louis Bromfield?
It is indeed. What is the
name? The Green Bay Tree.
Very good, Mr. Adams, yes. That's doing very well. Spreading himself like the green bay tree. It's in the Bible, the 37th Psalm, 35th verse. Any contradictions? Second, quote, And how am I to face the odds of man's bedevilment and God's, I a stranger and afraid, in... The conclusion of that quatrain gives us the title of a recent novel, or a novel of the last few years. Any ideas? One of your favorite poets, Mr. Kieran. A. Houseman.
Not mine.
Don't you like Houseman?
I.
Down he goes in my estimation. I, a stranger and afraid in a world I never made. A world I never made. The title of a novel
James
by whom?
James T. Farrell.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. That's right. Have to count that wrong, I'm afraid. Now I have to get the next one right. Quote, One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. Blank, and the sun goeth down. The blank part is the part that gives us the quotation. This is, of course, from the Bible. Any ideas?
Who wrote it?
The Bible.
No, who wrote this book?
This book was written by Ernest Hemingway, but I'm afraid that gives it away, Mr.
Adams.
The sun also riseth, and the sun goeth down. I'm afraid we can't give that to you. That's $25 and a set of the Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike, to Miss Kays. How about the next one? This comes from Ronald Lockwood of Bridgefield Park, New Jersey. Again, get 2 out of 3. Name the secretary in President Roosevelt's cabinet in whose department is vested the following task. In the first case, the task of protecting the president. What member of the cabinet has that job, protecting the president? That is, in whose department is it? Mr. Wickard.
Attorney General.
No, that's what I would have thought myself, Attorney General. Mr. Levant.
The Interior?
Well, that's too wrong. Mr. Kieran.
What is the Interior?
I think it is the Internal Revenue.
That's Internal Revenue?
Well,
no.
That's the Treasury.
Well, I know the Treasury, but some of the
Commerce, Secretary of Commerce?
No, we've named
the
practically
Coast Guard,
everything.
For instance, comes under that.
No, it's a division of the Treasury Department. That is, the Secret Service has the task of protecting the President.
Treasury.
That's a division of the
Treasury
Department.
Internal Revenue. I meant Treasury.
I know you did. But you should have said...
this is a good night to know.
Therefore, Mr. Morgenthau would have as one of his jobs protecting the President. That gives us one wrong. How about fixing the weight of a bushel of wheat? In whose department would that job be? In fixing the weight of a bushel of wheat. The only hand I have, Mr. Wickett, are you trying to figure it out? We don't think on this program, you know. That's the mistake you've been making all along. Mr. Levant.
If it isn't Mr. Wickett's department, how about the Commerce again? I don't know what they do anyway.
Department of Commerce is right.
Well, I finally found
out. I hate to give it to you, Mr. Levant.
Why? Right. Why?
I'll explain it to you.
Be generous.
Fixing the weight of a bushel of wheat comes...
Weights and measures.
Bureau of Standards. Bureau of Standards, that's part of the Department of Commerce, so that Mr. Jesse Jones would have that as his job. Got to count that right, Mr. Levant?
Well, see how much I know unconsciously alone.
I think I'd rather depend on what you know unconsciously. How about this? Who would have the job of suggesting properly balanced diets and their preparation? Suggesting properly balanced diets and their preparation. Mr. Wickett.
That perhaps would come to the Department of Agriculture. But at the present time, we have a lot of nutrition work in the Federal Security Administration.
Oh, they're spreading the work, are they?
Well, it's a sort of cooperative enterprise.
I see. But actually, that would be in your own prerogative, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Part of the Bureau of Home Economics.
That's right.
Mr. Claude G. Wickard would suggest properly balanced diets and their preparation to you if properly approached. That gives us...
How about a little cabbage?
Gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Joseph L. Blau of Brooklyn? Name 4 literary titles which mention some term associated with farming. With farming. Now, almost there are anything associated with farming. Start us off, Mr. Adams.
The Farm by Louis Bromfield.
That's short, sweet, and simple. Mr. Wickard.
RFD.
RFD, very good, yes. Who wrote it?
Oh, stop me.
So have I. Mr. Kieran.
The Plow and the Stars.
The Plow and the Stars, a play by Sean O'Casey. That's very good. Mr. Levant.
The Peasants by Ladislaus Raymond, a Nobel Prize winner.
That's a dandy, yes. A 4-volume book, novel by Ladislaus Raymond. Westward Ho, Mr. Adams. How would that
be? Oh, very good.
You like that, eh? Oh, very good.
How about King's Row by Bellamans?
King's Row?
Well, it was near a farm, not about 50 miles away. Oh,
The Corn is Green, a play still running, isn't it, Mr. Levant, on Broadway?
The Farmer Takes a Wife.
The Farmer Takes a Wife, a play of a couple of years ago. The Cherry Orchard by Chekhov. There are a number of others. How
Green
about
Pastures.
This? Green Pastures, very good.
Yeah, I'm quick tonight.
Margaret Preston of Albuquerque, New Mexico, sends in this very timely question. Tomorrow, as some of you gentlemen know, we will have to send in our income tax to the federal government to help support Mr. Wickard. And apropos of the 15th of March, gentlemen, I'm going to ask you these questions about taxes. Get 2 out of 3. A, what is the minimum taxable income? The minimum taxable income. I have 3 hands. Mr. Wickard.
$800.
$800 if you're in what position?
Single.
Single, yes. And suppose you are not single.
$1,000.
Oh, no, $2,000. Don't be scotch. $2,000. What is the lowest taxable income to which the surtax applies? The lowest taxable income to which the surtax applies. You boys are not interested in the surtax. Mr. Wickard.
I think 6,000.
No, no, you're too generous.
5.
Mr. Levant?
5.
Come down, Mr. Levant.
45.
4, that's fine. Have to call that wrong. $4,000. $4,000. Now, at what level, gentlemen, is the maximum surtax rate, and what is it? Is that clear? Oh, this is a big, big number. Mr. Wickard?
$1 million, I think.
No, no, it is not. $5 million and over.
$5 million.
And in that case, what is the rate of the surtax? Anybody?
77%.
75%. 75%.
I never paid that, you know.
No, you don't have to say that.
75. Have you got a pencil?
Well, you might have a minute of silent sympathy for the poor boys who have to pay 75% for $5 million and over. Well, that gives us 2 wrong, and send $25 instead of the Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike, to Mr. Preston. Now, so far, we announce a loss of $75 and 3 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now here's Mr. Cross with a sheaf of very official-looking papers.
Mr. Fadiman, these papers contain annual reports from 119 tobacco markets, markets where tobacco buyers buy over 96% of all the cigarette tobacco sold at auction in this country. Now, at every one of these 119 markets during the past season, the American Tobacco Company paid higher prices to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. For example, at Brookneal, Virginia, American paid 34% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 34% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. At Farmville, North Carolina, American paid 49% more. At Douglas, Georgia, 50% more. And so it goes. To enjoy finer, lighter, milder tobaccos, ask for Lucky Strike.
Mr. Cross, you cover the tobacco markets in 55 seconds flat. Now we go on with a question from Norma Wagen of Fox River Grove, Illinois. Get 2 out of 3. This is more or less up Mr. Levant's alley, but I hope the rest of you will join in.
This is not Texas, is it?
No, this is easy. The studio pianist is going to play 3 pieces of entrance music. Whatever entrance music is, you probably know, Mr. Levant.
I know exit music better.
Well, you're to tell whose entrance is suggested by each piece of music. Is that clear? Now, let's have the first. Gee whiz. 1, 2, 3 hands. You want to, Mr. Levant, want to give the boys
let's
a chance?
Let's share it, yeah.
Mr. Adams, want to help us out?
Well, it might be acrobats.
Oh, well, it's a definite thing, not...
I see.
It is a definite piece of music to which certain definite people enter. Mr. Kieran.
I think that's in common.
No, I don't think so. Oh. That was Mr. Adams whistling.
Well, it's used for entrances in vaudeville for acrobats and skating acts and so forth. And,
but specifically, it's a piece of music called what?
Well, utilitarianly speaking, it's not used anymore for that, so what difference does it make?
Well, it's the entry of the gladiators.
I was right.
Did you know that?
No, but I mean, you don't have time for gladiators anymore to enter.
No, but I want to know specifically who enters to this music in the original piece of music. And this is Julius Fuchik's entry of the gladiators. How about the next one? Got that, Mr. Levant? Yes.
Well, that's by Wagner. I think that's Tannhauser.
Yeah. Who enters?
A lot of people in the second act.
Do you know what?
I think it's the beginning of the second act, just before that song contest.
Well, who comes in?
The people who are going to hear the singing contest.
Call them guests, will you? And then you'll be right.
Is that what they are?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Entrance of the guests from the second act of Tannhauser. Now, how about the last? Ideas? Mr. Levant had his hand up at once.
Well, that's Pagliacci.
Yes, who enters?
Can I sing that?
I doubt it. You mean may you sing it?
May I sing it?
Who does enter?
I think the clowns.
Yes, the clowns. Entrance of the clowns in Pagliacci. That gives us at least 2 out of 3. How about this one from Fred McNally of Elyria, Ohio? Get 3 out of 4. Now, I'm going to give you several lists of words, gentlemen. One word is incorrectly included in each list. It just doesn't belong there. Pick it out and tell me why it's incorrectly included. Here's the first list. Prairie dog, gray fox, timber wolf, coyote. Now, one of them doesn't belong in that list of 4. We have 2 hands. Mr. Kieran?
A prairie dog is not a dog. It doesn't belong to the dog family.
It doesn't belong in this case to the fox and wolf family. I suppose
that's
the
same. Well, they belong to the dog family.
Conis something or other. What is a prairie dog?
Prairie dog that has a very odd little name, Sinner something or other, C-Y. It belongs to the ground squirrel family.
I think a prairie dog is a gopher.
Is that a doggy?
It belongs to the spermophile, a ground squirrel family.
Oh, there you go, Mr. Kieran.
Rodent.
It's a rodent, isn't it? This doesn't belong to the same family to which rats belong?
Well, a squirrel also belongs to the rodent family.
That's right. I beg your pardon. Of course a squirrel does. My hat is off to the squirrel. If any squirrels are listening, I beg their pardon. The prairie dog doesn't belong in that category. Now, here's another set. Hurdle, furlong, half mile, marathon. What one doesn't belong? Mr. Adams.
Marathon.
No.
Why doesn't it belong?
No.
Give Mr. Adams a chance to explain why he's wrong.
What were the others?
Hurdle, furlong, half mile, marathon.
I don't think marathon is in there because I think the others are concerned with horse races and a marathon is not.
Hurdle, concerned with horse races?
Yes.
May I?
Ben Hurdle, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Levant?
Well, Hurdle's the one that should be left out. Because
why?
That has to do with a jumping, running thing. The rest are horse races.
The rest are all races of distance.
Distance. I was wrong there because marathon, you're right.
That's right. No, I don't think you could substantiate
well, don't horses
that
jump over a hurdle in a steeplechase?
Yes, but the others are all races
of
distance.
You don't ask them only.
Oh.
See?
Touché.
All right. Well, we've quieted you anyway. How about this? Ampere, volt, watt, erg. Which one doesn't belong in that collection of names? Mr. Kieran.
Erg.
Why?
Erg is a unit of work. The others are measures of electricity.
That's a perfect response. Go to the head of the class, Mr. Kieran. Very good. Isn't he good, Mr. Wigan?
Fine.
Yeah, he's all right. Here's another set. Here's another set of words. Shrike, that's S-H-R-I-K-E, nuthatch, curlew, wake robin. Which doesn't belong in that set of four? Mr. Kieran again.
The shrike, the curlew, and the nuthatch are birds, and the wake robin is a member of the trillium family, a flower.
Ah, that's very good, Mr. Kieran. Thank you very much indeed. That's fine. The next one from Francis Kuhn of New York City. Now, people sing for different reasons, except in the case of Mr. Adams, who doesn't need any reason. Who sang for a meal? Mr. Adams.
Little Tommy Tucker.
Gee, you outdone me. Who sang to win a bride? To win a bride? Mr. Levant.
Meister Singer?
You bet. Right. What was his name?
Waller.
Yeah.
Von Stoltzing or something.
Whom
huh?
did he win?
He won Eva.
He won Eva. That's very...
Little I Eva?
No, she was pretty big by the time I saw her.
This isn't the opera, Mr. Kieran. Who sang to convey a message? These are questions that are drawn from plays and movies and that sort of thing. To convey a message, sang or hummed. That will do just as well. Sang or hummed.
What do you mean, a message of love?
A message. No, it wasn't a message of love. More important than that. Mr. Kieran.
I'm thinking of Barbara Seville as singing to convey a message.
Well, that's all there is singing in that.
I was thinking of the character who's played... By Dame May Whitty in The Lady Vanishes. Do you remember The Lady Vanishes?
Oh, that's right. That's a very
remember that, Mr. Levant?
Very well, yeah.
It was in that case that she hummed some notes.
A bohemian kind of folk song.
And that conveyed a secret service message, mm-hmm. so to speak. Now, who sang when released from confinement? When released from confinement, Mr. Levant.
Well, any number of... I don't want to mention their names. I'll kind of get in bed. But some of the boys who sing like... Incorporated. The first word begins with murder.
That's very clever, but I didn't mean that kind of singing. Mr. Kieran.
4 and 20 blackbirds.
Yes, 4 and 20 blackbirds. What do you suppose they sang, Mr. Kieran? Do you imagine what they might...
Jubilee, I guess.
Coming through the pie, maybe. How about... that gives us 3 out of 4. That's enough. How about this one from Maurice Beckenstein of Brooklyn, New York? Get 3 out of 4 again. This is about various Americans who... have been ambassadors to England. Name a Secretary of State who was an ambassador to England in his time. A Secretary of State, Mr. Adams.
John Hay.
John Hay.
Yes?
I think that is right.
Yeah.
I may be contradicted, but I'm going to accept that as right until I hear to the contrary. Mr. Levant?
How about Kellogg?
Frank B. Kellogg, yes. Ambassador in 1924 and Secretary of State in 25. Now name a Vice President of the United States who was an ambassador to England. A Vice President. Mr. Wickard?
Dawes.
Dawes is right, yes. How about a Secretary of the Treasury, who was an ambassador? Mr. Wickard again.
Mellon.
Mellon is right. And a defeated candidate for the presidency, who was an ambassador. A defeated candidate for the presidency. That's perhaps not quite so easy as the others. Any ideas, gentlemen? But we're all right so far. It's
what
John...
What year?
He was ambassador in 1918 to 21. For John W.
I didn't know Davis was an ambassador.
John W. Davis, yes, he was. Well, that gives us 3 out of 4. Now, what can you do with this one from Philip Galloway of Hollywood? If you woke up one morning and found yourself in one of these fictitious houses, who would be your host or hostess? Get 3 out of 4. Suppose you woke up at Manor Farm, Dingley Dell. Who would your host be? Mr. Kieran?
Well, that's Dickens, of course.
It is? What novel?
It's the man who had the fat boy working for him and who had the maiden... sister who was run off with by Mr. Winkle.
I see you know the whole thing.
I know everything except the man's name.
You've got the man.
Yeah.
His initial is W. How about
Wardle.
That? Wardle. Very Wardle. Good. Mr. Wardle in Pickwick Papers. That's fine, Mr. Kieran. Now, suppose you woke up at 12 Oaks. 12 Oaks. In whose house would you be? 12 Oaks.
I ought to know that.
You ought to know that, Mr. Levant. It's been in a movie. Mr. Adams.
I think that's in Gone with the Wind.
It is, Mr. Adams. Right. Very good. Which character?
I think that's the original place in the first part of it.
I don't think so.
Is that?
Well, I don't know.
Mr. Levant?
If I woke up there, I certainly would never go home again.
Is that after... I've forgotten her name since the picture, but Gable and Lee get married. Then he builds that house.
Is it Ashley Wilkes?
Well, I'm entirely wrong.
You're a little wrong. But you have the book, Mr. Adams. It's Ashley Wilkes. We'll call that wrong. Now, suppose you woke up. This is really hard. At the Quiet Woman Inn. The Quiet Woman Inn.
Well, would we be allowed to wake up there?
It's the name of an inn in a novel, an English novel. Any ideas? That's a tough one. Your host and hostess would be Mr. and Mrs. Wildeve, who are characters in Thomas Hardy's novel, The Return of the Native.
Ooh.
That's a pretty tough one, I think. Too wrong. Now, how about waking up at Putnam Hall? Putnam Hall. Who would your host be, or hosts? Putnam Hall? Wakens no response at all?
No.
Mr. Adams, you never read anything about Sensible Dick, Fun-Loving Tom, and Youthful Sam, the heroes of the Rover Boys?
No.
Who lived at Putnam
never.
Hall? Did you, Mr. Kieran?
Never.
Mr. Wickard?
Never.
What'd you do with your youth? Putnam Hall was the place where the Rover Boys lived at school. And that loses us $25 and a set of the Britannica going to Mr. Gallagher, courtesy of Lucky Strike. And now here's Mr. Cross.
A few minutes ago, I read you a few typical reports from tobacco markets. These reports show that the American Tobacco Company consistently pays higher prices to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. For example, at Brookneal, Virginia, 34% more than the market average. Farmville, North Carolina, 49% more. Douglas, Georgia, 50% more. Now, these big price differences in tobacco sold at auction may surprise you, but they're facts well known to the independent tobacco experts. The auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen see the prices paid at every auction. They see just what kind of tobacco is bought by the different buyers, and they are expert judges of the leaf. Well, sworn records show that they choose Lucky's for their own cigarette by an overwhelming majority. In fact, with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1. So if you're looking for a cigarette of finer, lighter, milder tobaccos, let me just ask, have you tried a Lucky lately?
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has paid out a total of $100 and 4 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Mr. Wickard, for joining the party this evening. Now, next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will be at bat, and they'll be supported first by our good friend Deems Taylor, the composer, poser, and radio commentator, and one of America's favorite actors of stage and screen, the inimitable Roland Young. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer of Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Lucky's pay higher prices for the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehouse men, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.